Welcome to the Junior MBA Coaches Corner with your host, Jay Billis. Today, Jay welcomes former Celtics, 76ers, and Pacers head coach and current senior advisor with the Philadelphia 76ers, Jim O'Brien, and head coach of Archbishop Mitty High School in San Jose, California, Sue Phillips. And now, here's your host, Jay Billis.
Welcome to Junior NBA Coaches Corner, a weekly podcast that brings you some of the greatest minds in the game to talk about some of the most important topics in the game, especially as it relates to coaching the game and teaching the game. And today our topic is practice planning and resources. And we have two just spectacular guests, Jim O'Brien of the Philadelphia 76ers and Sue Phillips of Archbishop Mitty High School in San Jose, California, also very active with USA Basketball. But we're going to start off with Jim O'Brien, who has been a basketball lifer, been in the game since he's been a player, but has coached at every level of the game and has been a head coach of the Boston Celtics, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Indiana Pacers, and is now a special consultant for the Philadelphia 76ers. And Jim, first want to welcome you into the podcast and wanted to ask you, in talking about formulating practice plans and the resources used, do you remember the first practice plan you ever put together on your own?
I do. I was a head coach at Wheeling Jesuit University in West Virginia when I was 30 years old. But I had a lot of experience observing really good coaches put together plans. But now it was my teaching plan, so it probably took a little longer than I had anticipated.
Well, teaching plan is a great way to put it as far as practice plans are concerned. And when you're formulating a practice plan at the start of a season, what's the process that you go through to formulate the best practice plan?
Well, sometimes it varies depending on the level, although I think all levels are similar from the standpoint of making sure that the practice plans are concise and everyone knows what you're trying to accomplish. But one of the things that really impacts the practice plan, the master plan that you have, is really who you perceive your team is going to be. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? How are you going to win games against the competition that you're going to play against? You know, do you have a chance to be one of the elite defensive teams in the league? Do you have a great individual scorer like I had Allen Iverson and Paul Pierce and at different times, how you want to utilize them? What is going to allow your team to win basketball games? Another example, I was an associate coach with Rick Pitino with the University of Kentucky. And we knew that we were going to press opponents every chance we got all game. So we spent twice as much time on pressure defense as maybe somebody else would. So one, who is your team going to be? How are they going to win games? And then you lay that over top of the entire season, and it'll tell you what your practice plan is going to look like.
How did you structure your practices and your practice plans?
Well, again, it's a little bit different at different levels. I did not have the privilege of coaching in high school, so I coached at small college, major college, and in the NBA. And I learned a lot from Jack Ramsey, Rick Pitino. And one of the things that Rick Pitino really emphasized, and it's a very good organizational tool, is he broke every practice down into 10 parts. And they would be the typical parts that that every coach would be talking about. It would be warm-ups, and one part would be warm-ups, one part would be fast break, shooting, full court pressure, half court offense, half court defense, rebounding special situations, end of game situations, sideline out of bounds, underneath out of bounds, scrimmages, and conditioning at the end. So there are 10 parts. And you didn't always a lot in a 2.5 hour practice, 15 minutes to each one of them, but it gave you a way of organizing your thought process. Some days you might need more shooting. Some days you're really trying to hone your half court offense. But it really gives you a structure and an organization that is necessary on a daily basis to, you know, what you're going to hit on and how long you're going to spend on each element.
Jim, in your coaching career, did you have certain things in your practice plans and your practices that were absolutes that you did every day without fail? Or did your practices vary from day to day, week to week?
Basically, if there's one thing that was consistent and remains consistent at our level, is the buildup of fundamentals, the concentration on the ability to play in an athletic stance, whether you have the ball or whether you're coming off the screens, the ability to have really great body balance, the ability to play down in your stance, whether you're on the ball or off the ball. Someone once said, and this is, I have found this to be very accurate, and that is, if you're not sprinting back on defense or sprinting on the fast break, you should rarely be out of your stance, which is just an athletic, balanced, knees bent, hands ready type of stance. So that is not something that is easily sold at any level. And so the ability to be in a good stance is imperative. Another thing that we almost always hit on is the ability to penetrate the paint and get under control. That if you don't have a shot, that you jump stop. So you bring 360 degrees around you into play. Those fundamentals, you know, every fundamental that Jay, you've been taught, or Coach Phillips teaches, you know, constantly to her teams, the fundamentals are the key building blocks of every team at every level. So that never varies. Again, you might change up how much you're spending on half court defense, or rebounding, depending on maybe who you're coming, your next opponent is. But the fundamentals never vary.
How have you balanced in your career, in your practice planning and your practices, the individual skill development of players and your development as a team?
Well, that is something also that varies, Jay, between levels. And that's not to say that one level is better than the other level. But for instance, we have a whole team of player development coaches that do not include Brett Brown and his staff. We have people that one development coach might just have two players, no more than two players. And when we're not practicing, those development coaches are responsible for doing the extra team development type of things with the player that they're in charge of. At the college level, you really utilize your bench coaches because nobody else is allowed to really work with your players. But then you use the managers as screen setters or passers or rebounders, because you spend an enormous amount of time as coaches on trying to develop the individual skills that your players have to improve on a regular basis. At the high school level, I would imagine it's same as it was for me at a small college level. Couldn't really pay a lot of staff members. So your coaches spend an exorbitant amount of time outside of practice using different drills to allow their players to get better and better. But it's a player development is as important an element for coaches as there is. It's more important in plays.
When you would sit down to do a practice plan, so you'd have your vision for what you want to do that day, but I would imagine you also have to have a long-term vision about where you want to be down the road. How did you balance what you need today versus building toward where you want to be as you move on in the season?
Yeah, it's a master plan. And, you know, it's what every teacher at every level in the classroom would do. They begin with the end in mind. What are your goals? If your goal is a championship, and many teams always have that as a goal. Some have a better chance than others. But you really look at what is going to make this particular group of young men or young women reach their potential. And you just take the 10 parts that I talked about, 10 practice parts, and you kind of keep a running ledger about, you know, you can look back after a week, you know, how much time did we spend on shooting? How much time did we spend on the fundamentals of the game? How much time did we spend on our half-court man-to-man defense? How much time did we spend on a half-court zone? And you look at that, and, you know, it's amazing. You get into the season, and you look at maybe a loss that you just took on the chin, and maybe, let's just say it as an example, rebounding killed you. You just got beaten up on the boards. It's amazing when you look back on the past week's practice plans or the past month's practice plan. Generally speaking, what beat you is what you haven't spent enough time on in your practice plans. So if you pride yourself in being thorough and hitting every particular phase of the game, that master plan that you put together before the season, and then you use it to track what kind of teaching each player is receiving on a daily basis. It's amazing when you keep scoring yourself how important that is.
That's a great point. You are what you emphasize as a coach and as a staff. That's a fantastic point. Do you believe in your coaching career there's an optimal amount of time that you practice where you can have diminishing returns if you go too long, and obviously can't get enough done if you go too short? Is there a time limit, you think, or a perfect time to practice?
It depends. The NCAA, last time I was in it, dictates that you have an upper limit of how much practice time you can have. I assume that's still the case. At the NBA level, it is astounding how much the medical staff has to do with how long you can practice. So when Brett Brown and his staff are putting together today's practice, before we sign off on what we're going to do on the court, the medical staff will come and say, you know, I wouldn't go any more than 1 hour or 45 minutes. And of that 1 hour, I would only have three or four drills where you're going up and down. Now, that's unique to the NBA just because we play 82 games. And what you do not want to do is leave your players' legs on the practice floor. But at the same time, there is work to be done. And you have to take every minute and make sure that it's not wasted, and your drills are crisp, and you're getting what you want out of the drills at the level that you want your players to play at. And for every coach is, let's go game speed. But there are some times where you can't go game speed just because you don't, the fatigue factor. At the college level, you practice more. At the high school level, I'm not sure if there's a limit, but certainly, Jay, you hit it right on the head. You do not want to exhaust your players. I would say, in my experience, at the beginning of the year, at the NBA level, training camp, and early in the season, our practices seem to be longer and more intense because there's so much that goes into putting a winning team together. As the season gets longer and the players start to fatigue, you back off and your practice plans become shorter, which puts continuous emphasis on making sure that every minute counts and that your players are sharp when they're executing the practice plan.
Jim, did you allow yourself to deviate from the plan based upon what you were seeing on the floor? In other words, if you were working on your, you had allotted 5 minutes to work on half-court defense or 10 minutes half-court defense, and you thought, you know, we're not getting it the way I would like, so we're going to go a little bit longer and we'll make an adjustment somewhere else. How often would you adjust based on what you're seeing in practice?
Pretty much every day. You never want to become a slave to the clock. So if you put 15 minutes on the clock and you're trying to work on a particular phase of the game, and on one hand, it's not working, and you think you might, if you extend it for another 3 or 4 minutes, you might make it a little bit better, then you'll do that. But there are other times on the flip side. I remember the greatest feelings that I've ever had with teams that I've coached. I can remember a couple times in my first or second year with the Boston Celtics, we would put together a practice plan, and it was getting towards the playoffs, and we would have maybe an hour practice plan put together. And about 25 minutes into it, if we were scrimmaging, I remember two or three times stopping it and saying to guys, that's championship basketball that you just played for the last 5 minutes. We don't have to continue practicing. That's good enough. You can go home. That is one of the greatest feelings I've ever had as a coach, that your players have bought into, a vision of how the game should be played at their level, and they should seek a championship level, and you see it in front of your own eyes on the practice floor. And it has to be extremely rewarding for players to hear from their coach, guys, girls, that's championship basketball that you just showed me. Why don't you go ahead and go home?
That's so great. You know, Jim, I remember years ago, Bob Knight telling me that he didn't want his players to know what his practice plan was going into a particular practice. He had the practice plan, but he didn't give access to the players because he wanted them to react during the course of practice. What has your philosophy been on that? Do the players have access to the practice plan? Do they know what's coming, how long practice is going to be, or would you rather them not know that?
Well, it varies, Jay. I'll tell you what I think is a funny story. I left the Boston Celtics and came to be the head coach of the 76ers when Allen Iverson was playing. And it was right after Allen's whole practice interview. Practice, you know, we're talking about practice. So I sat down with Allen for the first time and I said, you know, Allen, you and I have something in common. I heard you don't really like the practice that much. And I want to tell you, I have no intention of practicing you very much. I said, because I would like you to play 44 out of 48 minutes a game. I said, but what you have to do, you have to be on time. You have to stretch with your teammates. You have to start practice. And then after you get warmed up a little bit, I'm going to pull you out of practice. And I said, how's that sound for a plan? And he said, Coach, that sounds great. The irony is that once he got started practicing, you couldn't get him out of practice. So it had a funny way of working out. And I don't believe that you should necessarily go over the whole practice plan with your players. One of the humorous things that you've heard coaches say in the past is that, gentlemen, we have an hour-long practice. We hope it only lasts an hour. But this hour-long practice might extend to 2 hours if you're not getting it done at the level that we wanted you to get it done. So it's it goes both ways. But, you know, Jack Ramsey taught me at a very kind of a young age, and he said this even about the great players in the NBA, is that every player that he's ever come in contact with wants two things. They want organization and discipline. And they want those things because they all want to get better. So you bring an organized game plan, practice plan, team development plan, and you have the discipline to run that plan crisply. Players at every level buy into it very, very quickly because they see this improvement that they're thinking about.
Well, speaking of organization, there are so many great resources out there for especially young coaches to help them formulate practice plans and practice planning in general and learning to be a better coach. And one of those is eCoach, which I know you're involved with. I'm a loyal subscriber. I get the emails every day. I'm constantly on that site. It's fabulous. And you had a wonderful drill attacking the defender's top foot in a closeout. And let's take a look at that from eCoach.
Hi, Jim O'Brien with the NBA Coaches and eCoach. We're talking about building your game with the fundamentals right now of attacking the middle of the court with good pivoting and attacking the top foot of anybody that's closing out on you. There's a real key here. If Dylan would be out here, I'm going to really emphasize in this segment that when you get a defensive player closing out, and we know we want to attack his top foot, so Dylan would want to attack this foot if this was up, this foot if I was defending this way. But a real key, it's a game of inches, and there are five defensive players that are trying to stop the basketball. So as I come up with, say, this foot up, it's very important that Dylan goes shoulder to shoulder past me, that I feel him and he's going to end up right behind me. This cuts off any angle that the defense might have. If he goes wide, it's easy for me to recover and play him. So we're going to emphasize the jump stop, pivot through, snapping the basketball, closing out, attacking the top foot, shoulder to shoulder. All right, here we go. This is what it looks like. Good. Step through, snap the ball. Snap the basketball. Don't float the basketball. Snap the basketball. Nice job of shoulder to shoulder. Very good, guys. Basketball is a game of inches. The fundamentals that you work on when you're just with a buddy in the gym, okay, has to be concise. The concept of jump stopping, attacking the top foot, going shoulder to shoulder. If one of these guys isn't doing it, the other has to say, hey, sloppy footwork, let's get this right.
Well, Jim, that's great stuff. And I know that would have been a resource you would have liked to have had when you started your coaching career in college at Wheeling. But what do you think eCoach provides, especially to young coaches that are learning the craft?
Well, eCoach was put together a couple years ago after I was in China speaking and realized it really wasn't a resource like eCoach. And we did a little research. We found that everybody in China, South America, America, Europe spend 9 hours a day on iPads or iPhones or whatever. And that if we put together good teaching drills that were no more than 2.5, 3 minutes, that's about the length of time that a young boy or a young girl are interested in looking at. And we think the Coaches Association, the NBA Coaches Association, has put together the greatest sports library of teaching in the history of sports. And to be able to have a resource like eCoach for anybody. And there's all levels. There's a beginner level, just the fundamentals that, frankly, that girl that you just saw can be used at any level. It can be used right now during this period of time with two people in without a basket even in their driveway to work on footwork, jump stops, snapping passes, attacking the top foot. It's really a remarkable resource for anybody. And the irony of it is that there are a lot of NBA coaches that are on eCoach, as well as high school coaches and grade school coaches and parents and young men and young women, looking at the fundamentals of the game, trying to find out if they can teach their sport a little better. There's no better time than when we're all kind of shut in with this virus that's going on. There's ways to grow your game. And eCoach provides a remarkable resource. We created, the NBA coaches have created a library of 900 of these tips and drills.
Ways to grow the game. That's a great way to end it. And Jim, thank you for all you do for the game. And thanks for joining us on Junior NBA Coaches Corner.
Thanks, Jay.
We are now honored to be joined by one of the really great head coaches at the high school level, Sue Phillips, who's the head coach at Archbishop Mitty High School in San Jose, California. She's also an outstanding coach in USA basketball and has been for many years. She has been 26 years a head coach, almost 700 wins in that capacity, 23 league titles in those 26 years, in addition to 12 Northern California titles and 6 state championships in the state of California. And want to welcome in Coach Sue Phillips. And Sue, we've been talking about practice planning and the resources that that coaches have available. And wanted to start with you on your practice plans. And how do you formulate a practice plan, and what structure do your practice plans take?
Well, first of all, Jay, thanks for having me today. I'm really looking forward to talk some X and O's in this interesting time that we're experiencing. I'm really missing my time in the gym. So I relish this opportunity to talk some hoops. As far as practice planning go, I think you kind of have to follow the rhythm of the school year. Preseason is a little bit different than the regular season, and then different than postseason. Although, you know, some people may think focusing on team stuff, on the contrary, we really try to hammer home the fundamentals on a regular basis, probably about 45 minutes, strictly on footwork and passing and shooting, communication, and then we're attention to detail throughout the practice. So we're still hammering home those fundamentals, making sure that we're faking a pass to make a pass, we're using the appropriate hand to finish a layup, those kinds of things. So yes, we do work on some team things, but I think skill development has to be your key, particularly at the grassroots level.
And how much time in a practice do you generally devote to individual skill development as opposed to your team concepts?
We like to practice for 2.5 hours, and that's inclusive of warm-ups, cool down, any weight training for that day or film session. So when we're talking about the meat of practicing, getting up and down, it's usually 2 hours. So we will be anywhere from 30 minutes to 45 minutes on skill development.
And are there certain things, certain drills that are absolutes for you in your program that you do every single day without fail?
We always work on some ACL prevention exercises. And so we think about training the knee in 360 degrees. So we're talking about closeouts and back pedals and jumping and speed skaters. So we incorporate kind of those movements about sliding, recovering, closeouts, and then finishing off of a slide. So we kind of bring a defensive drill into an offensive drill. We start every practice with some type of ACL prevention. Then we always move into some kind of passing drill, whether that's, with just a teammate or a group activity. Then we always work on ball handling as well. I think it's big to handle the basketball in transition and make advantage reads, both offensively and defensively, and how do you defend if it's a disadvantage D. So we have that general flow. So there's kind of blocks that we're teaching, whether that's rebounding or shooting or passing. And then we try to vary the drills on a daily basis. So the kids kind of know the first hour is going to circle around those concepts.
And I assume at your school, you have a JV program. So your varsity team, and then you may have a coach may have a JV program, maybe a freshman sophomore team. How do you integrate practice plans and program planning so that the players that are playing JV or maybe freshman sophomore, they know what they're doing when they get to play for you?
Absolutely, Jay. That's a great question. I am of the belief that I generally want freshmen. We have a true freshman team. So I have a freshman team and then a JV team, which is comprised of predominantly sophomores, maybe some freshmen. And then the varsity, any age is eligible for varsity. But my philosophy is if you're a freshman or sophomore and you're not in the top 8 to 10 in the playing rotation, then you need to play freshman or JV to get those minutes. And so what I started doing about 5 years ago is I created this idea called split shift. So let's say, Jay, you're on the JV team and you're on split shift and your JV practice is from 5 to 7 and the varsity is from 3 to 5. I would have you practice from 4 to 6. So I have you and 3 other teammates practice from 4 to 6. So for an hour, you're with the varsity and you're getting integrated into maybe some higher level screen reading, maybe a little deeper into our system in terms of sets or defensive concepts. And then you finish your practice for the first hour of the JV practice. And we rotate kids through on the JV team as well as the freshmen. And we do that 6 days a week. So I keep bringing in different kids so that we can kind of integrate all the kids into the program.
That's really interesting. And I know at that age, so many players are concerned about status. That what team they play on is a big deal to they feel to their status. Is it incumbent upon you and your staff that you have to really explain why a certain player is on a certain team or asked to have split shifts or things like that?
Yes, it requires quite a bit of communication on my part. I have a parent meeting at the beginning of the year, and I explain to them my philosophy about the importance of these kids having playing time. That they're taking and making the big shot, that they are directing traffic. They're starting to develop those leadership skills. Fortunately, we have a history of having kids play freshmen, and now they're at a BCS Division I program. And so people understand that you can't argue our history of development of players, that they're coming in and potentially playing on the freshman team, but then they're playing at a BCS program by the time they, when they leave, they're getting recruited at the D1 level. Nothing is worse than putting on the varsity sweatshirt and sitting the bench for 2 years and then seeing your development kind of become static. Sure, you're practicing with the varsity, but there's nothing better than playing a ton of minutes on the freshman or JV and then still practicing with the varsity 3 to 4 days a week. I mean, it's a perfect world. And we work way too hard to practice with the varsity and then sit the bench or play when it's, there's a blowout. That's not very meaningful minutes either.
Yeah. It sounds like we agree that there's nothing like playing in a game and getting game experience. Do you also feel like a player that is maybe good enough to play on the varsity, but is playing more minutes on the JV team, also develops sort of the ego of a good player that way, instead of sitting all the time and not having that success, having that success at a different, on a different team, different level is ultimately more helpful.
There's no question. And I think when there's a kid that's a tweener, you know, maybe they're in the 11th man, maybe they're, but they could start on the JV. And I had a scenario with two different kids 2 years ago. They just recently committed to a Division I program. They were sophomores that could either play JV or varsity. And ultimately, I made it up to them. I gave the decision up to them. I said, hey, here's the scenario. Here are the benefits one way or the other. One kid went one direction, stayed on JV, and I felt like her confidence blossomed. The other kid stayed on varsity because I had them both with our team for the preseason, trying to figure out if I could be creative enough in my rotation to get them meaningful minutes. And at some point, you can only do so much because everyone needs playing time to develop. And so each kid, one stayed on varsity, one stayed on JV, and each of them, the kid that stayed on varsity, saw it as a challenge. She embraced that opportunity. It didn't shake her confidence. She became more motivated, and both of them developed equally in their own set of strengths. And last year they started 30 games for us as juniors. So it was a really, really kind of cool story to see how they took two different pathways, and they're both now going to play Division I basketball. So it's cool.
That's great. So how do you decide what drills you're going to do day to day? How do you come up with your drills?
Well, Jay, I think as a player, you've experienced it. And as a coach, you watch game film and you just want to pull your hair out sometimes, whether that's a self-scout or you're watching an upcoming opponent. And so what I like to do is integrate some self-scout and create, maybe I make up a new drill. We do a thing called chug the cutter because I felt like we were chugging the cutters. And we start making contact and denying the cut into the paint, making contact. Maybe I don't like the way we're passing the basketball, so we're going to integrate some skip passes. We're going to skip the zone. We're going to fake a pass to make a pass. Maybe we're playing a team that runs a ton of on balls, so our shell drill in practice is going to emphasize on how we're going to defend the on ball. So we use a color scheme to use on balls to defend it. So black, we blitz it. Orange, we go under. Gold means we switch. White is a high, hard vertical hedge. So in the beginning of the year, we're going to drill a single color. And then by the end of the year, we're able to play orange on a particular player, but we're going to blitz or play black on another player. And so I like to watch film, and that kind of drives the way that I'm going to kind of tailor my practice in preparation for an upcoming opponent. And we break it down in a shell drill because nothing's worse than stopping practice and walking kids through. You can kind of embed it into your shell drills and have it be fun and competitive. And they don't even know they're working on next week's opponent.
You've mentioned several times fundamentals. And what are the fundamentals that you incorporate into all of your practices that you want your players to be proficient in?
I really think they have to be proficient in utilizing both hands. And that means finishing with both hands around the rim, being able to pass with both hands. I think it's imperative that they're a footed player. So when they decide to make a pass, they're able to pivot off either foot, their lead foot when they pass. They have to be able to utilize both feet. I think it's important that they can score at all three levels. In the girls' game, there is oftentimes a deficiency in a mid-range, like legitimate pull-up jump shot. I'm not talking about a set shot at which you jump when you shoot it. I'm talking about a pull-up jump shot. I think we always incorporate scoring at all three levels. So we talk about, you know, being able to knock down the three ball, the pull-up from mid-range, and we actually teach them the mechanics of a pull-up. Sometimes it's a lack of timing. It could be the inability to have the type of vertical to get your hands up into your shooting pocket in time to release it at the apex of your jump. So we do a lot of breakdown drills of jump shot, of the jump shot mechanics to actually formulate what looks like a mid-range pull-up, and then varied rim finishes. So I think it's important kids can finish through contact, where they can have a secondary finish where they're avoiding contact, whether that's a Euro step, up and under, being able to utilize their body to protect the basketball. These are things we do every day. And then defensively, we're a big defensive team, so we need to be able to defend the ball. We have to be able to help our teammate, and then we have to be able to help the helper. So these are things that are incorporated every single day in practice that we're able to do. And obviously you got to be able to handle the basketball with both hands under duress, not just moving up the floor.
What's your philosophy with your practice plan? Do your players know going into practice what you're going to do that day? Or are you more, I mentioned to Jim O'Brien that I remember Bob Knight telling me years ago that he didn't want his players knowing his practice plan. He wanted them to adjust on the fly and deal with what was thrown at them. And he didn't want them pacing themselves through practice, the idea that they might. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
Well, it's kind of a, I don't mean to sound like Switzerland, but I'm going to be somewhere in the middle. I do at times run into a kid on campus and I said, hey, you know, what drill you want to do? Player choice. And they said, well, do we have a category? I said, oh, rebounding. So they might say pin to the baseline, triangle, fast break. That's a team favorite. Or I'll say, hey, shooting drill, we need to get up some threes. So they may say skip past threes. So some of that, I kind of want to entice them into one of their favorites, right? So I'll ask them, hey, what do you want to do today? But then they typically know Mondays are more heavier on the legs. We get up and down quite a bit. And then the day before a game, we're tapering. So they kind of know that going in. But I really try to keep things fresh. I want to do different things every day, albeit we might be doing rebounding, we might be doing a shell drill, but maybe yesterday's shell drill was on ball and today is going to be just straight up defending the dribble drive. So I try to keep it fresh, keep it different, but then again, there are times I say, all right, player choice, what do you guys want to do? So really try to be a player's coach at times. I grew up in an era in which we were motivated by the stick, not so much the carrot. So about 5 years ago, I decided to go back to school and get my master's in performance psychology, which really kind of taught me how to be more creative with the carrot, and then helped me in my communication skills with the team so that I would really choose my words wisely. So for example, I'm really big on not apologizing on the court. So, you know, this whole idea of my bad or I'm sorry, you know, we don't kind of buy that. I mean, we know you didn't mean to miss the layup. And what we don't want to say is it's okay, because it's kind of not. So what we say is get the next one. And that way, no one's crying over spilt milk. Everyone's kind of moving on. No one's questioning anybody's effort or intention. And so I want them to be unapologetic in their effort, unapologetic in being a leader and being a winner. Don't apologize for trying to win. And so when we talk about just keeping everything formulated in the positive. So for example, if a kid is short on their shot, I'm gonna ask them, what's the corrective measure? But I know they were short, right? I want them to say, I gotta use more legs or I gotta freeze my finish. You know, whatever that corrective measure might be, going back to think of it from a psychological standpoint, it really is important how we get them to formulate the thought process in the process itself. And just really big on making sure that our language is about being a winner, about thinking, failing forward, next play speed, all these things that allow us to stay present and moving on in a direction to be positive and successful. Now, we're going to have our moments, don't get me wrong, but and I do believe in comfortable with chaos. So we'll play with a deflated ball. I'll swallow the whistle, you know, just to kind of get their goat and see how they manage the pressure.
Well, I love that. Unapologetic in trying to win. That's fantastic. And you had mentioned when you played and back when I played, the stick was more prevalent back then. But what wasn't as prevalent were the resources that we have now in order to improve our knowledge of the game and our understanding of it and how we apply those in our, you know, our everyday work on the court. And, you know, we've got the NBA and USA Basketball youth basketball guidelines, which are incredibly helpful for especially young coaches. The junior NBA curriculum, which has four levels of practice plans with 12 comprehensive plans at each level. And also the Junior NBA Coaches app, which you can customize your practice plans, drag and drop. It's really a fantastic resource. What are some of the resources that you're active in promoting and helping with and that you use yourself?
Well, I think all of those are amazing. There's no question. The one thing I love is I love coach academies that USAB puts on. whether I'm presenting at an academy or I'm attending an academy, I make it a point to go to as many sessions as possible, take copious notes, try to rub elbows with as many people as possible and pick their brain about what they're doing. How do they keep their practices competitive? How are they dealing with the kids and their pressure and the anxiety that they're experiencing with student athletes? And right now, it's a really unique time trying to be creative in these Zoom training sessions. So we do Zoom training sessions right now to try to get our kids some skill development in. And so both, to your point, both of those resources are fantastic. I think the youth accreditation process to become a USAB Gold licensed coach is great. Puts them through a host of videos and learning experiences that everyone can benefit from. And obviously just continuing to borrow or steal from another coach and talking and networking with other people. I think we can't ignore how valuable that is, that there's no substitute for experience. And so while as much as I can go online and pick a drill off of the internet, there's nothing more useful for me than talking to an experienced coach and ask them, what do they do to defend an on ball? How are they defending the dribble drive? Just things of that nature.
Well, I have seen you at a USA basketball clinic, and you are a magnificent teacher of the game, which leads me to my final question. Because you are such a great teacher, you can tell, you know, you talked about your master's degree. You've really honed your skills and your craft as a teacher. How much of your success as a coach with all of your state titles and league titles and Northern California championships, how much of your success as a coach do you attribute to your skills as a teacher?
Well, first of all, Jay, thank you for your kind words. To be clear, my mortgage is paid by being an algebra teacher. So I never get that twisted. I understand that being a math teacher is what pays the bills. And with that being said, I think we continue to evolve as educators when we're put into a classroom, and we need to reach all walks of life with, at times, some of the driest material as possible. How do I become creative? How do I learn to read people and connect with people and become a better communicator? Math has taught me that there are several different methods to get something done. So when we talk about critical thinking skills or problem techniques, when you're solving a quadratic equation, there's a multitude of ways we can do that. And so when we talk about being on the basketball court and shooting the basketball, some coaches are really big on, well, we're gonna shoot off the hop or 2 feet, or we're gonna have a permanent pivot foot, or we're gonna shoot with an inside pivot foot. What I try to do is educate the kids on what are the benefits of each, and fundamentally, I want them to be an efficient shooter. I want them to maximize their opportunities on the catch, and I want them to have clean footwork so they're not traveling. So 100% being a teacher has attributed significantly to my success as a coach, because I never forget that I'm a teacher first. I think in my younger years, I was struggling with a former athlete turning into a coach, and in competition, I don't think generally brings out the best in people, generally speaking. And so I really had to switch gears and recognize, okay, you're not competing anymore. On game day, sure, I want to win as bad as the next person, but I'm never going to sacrifice my integrity for a win. If our leading scorer is late to shoot around, well, they're not starting. That's a more important lesson I could teach my kids than whether or not we're winning or losing. So I will never do that.
Oh, words to live by. We can't thank you enough, Coach Sue Phillips of Archbishop Mitty High School in San Jose, California. Thank you for being with us on Junior NBA Coaches Corner.
Thank you, Jay, for having me.
For more coaching resources, including our curriculum, please visit juniornba.com. I want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach basketball video library to give our viewers an insider's perspective about how NBA coaches teach the topic we're focusing upon each week. For more information and to access the coaches' video library, go to ecoachbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Jay each week for the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.